Welcome back in. Another edition here, Fantastics Insider Football Podcast. I'm Dan Claskins along with James Adams. We're getting you ready for 2023 fantasy football, and that's exactly what we do. InsiderFootball.com is where you get all the tools, including the Fantastics Draft Advisor free trial there, our podcast, and all the other goodies. But here today, we're continuing our position breakdown in episode 71 of the pod, talking a little running backs. And if you missed any of the other ones, we've already done quarterbacks and tight ends and so much more. You want to subscribe wherever you listen and get caught up on it. We'll be dropping them almost on a weekly basis till the season kicks off, weekly during the season, and keeping you in the know there. And of course, catch us on Sirius XM all summer long, weekend mornings, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And James, always good to talk to you, my friend. I know we were definitely getting some drafts picked up here now, and finished up our Scott Fishbowl drafts. We're now in a slow draft in this new Dynasty Best Ball startup. I mean, so much more lying ahead in the weeks coming, and running back is a position that's going to be interesting in this year's draft and certainly not as highly valued as we've seen in recent years.
You know, it's not, but it's still a starting position. It's two starting positions, and quite frankly, depending on your league scoring, it's not like it's a complete afterthought to think about still using one in a flex position. Not necessarily the way most people are building lineups. And look, if you're in a full point PPR, maybe that's not the way to go when it comes to the flex position, but there's still going to be plenty of good lineups out there, especially in these half point best balls we're doing, that start three running backs in a given week. So yeah, it's not as highly valued, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to be in winning lineups, because every winning lineup is going to have at least two, if not three, every week.
Oh, I still value running back, to be clear. And I think as we get in deeper into this episode, talk strategies, we're going to get into some breakout candidates, identify some potential bust, some players that we're also expecting to bounce back. But let's start out here before we even get into the strategies, a little bit of some of the storylines, at least as we drop the pod here on July the 19th. There's a lot of developing situations at running back here. I mean, Dalvin Cook, we know that he, at this time of the podcast, remains without a home. We've seen Joe Mixon take a $4 million pay cut to remain a Cincinnati Bengal this week. Meanwhile, there's guys like the player Saquon Barkley that didn't sign his tag. Josh Jacobs didn't sign his tag. Some potential holdouts looming here, James. And it's interesting right now, the shift in thinking. Even, you know, we talk about it in fantasy, but even in NFL, as you look at over the last 10 years, tender amounts for quarterbacks and wide receivers have risen $17.5 million, $9.2 million respectively, but tag amounts for running backs have only risen $1.9 million. And the fact that, you know, they're not getting these long-term deals, they're all starting to band together here. Running back, James, is a position no guys want to play eventually at this rate.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I mean, I kind of understand it though, because it's been a very popular topic around basically everywhere since this has come to fruition, the tag deadline passed. I think Marshawn Lynch is the last like real deal running back. And I hate to say that because that diminishes the player since then, but there's been like 10 consecutive Super Bowls in a row where your running backs have been more like Ronald Jones and Isaiah Pacheco than they've been Marshawn Lynch or the guys holding out, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley. So I certainly get the shift in thought process when teams are building a roster, because it hasn't been what's been the winning piece as of late, whether that's a recent, just like a small trend, or it's the long-term answer to what the NFL puzzle figuring it out is going to be. Who knows? But I understand why it's gotten this way. And because it's gotten this way, I can tell you, man, I'm starting to think that I might be afraid of drafting these guys if they're truly saying they're going to hold out, because I didn't buy it when Le'Veon Bell said he was going to hold out.
Yeah, but that's really the only example we have from a fantasy perspective.
But now this might be a, hey, it's time for us to be the guys who make a point about what's going on, because there's a hullabaloo around this running back situation. Saquon, Eckler, these other guys are being a little bit more outspoken than I think we've heard before, where it's a group of running backs that are talking.
Where's
about
the NFLPA? They're the ones that have agreed to these rules.
I mean, gotcha. I'm just saying, from a pure fantasy perspective, now look,
so
you're
basically dropping these guys in your draft.
Scared to
right
death.
Now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you skipping over them or just
bypassing?
I'm taking the value. I'm not going to get that carried away yet.
I got burned.
I will, but I also like finding value, and this seems like an opportunity. So we might be a little different on that. Mm-hmm. But I hear you. This is, and without drastic action, change doesn't happen. You keep doing the same thing. So I'm not arguing against your line of thinking. I just think that, you know, between $10 million or $11 million and $0, it's a lot easier for us to say that sounds like a cool idea than these guys actually to execute.
I don't disagree. I couldn't do it. I couldn't even, I can't fathom that amount of money though. So, I mean, I can't even honestly tell you what I'd do because I can't fathom having that much in the bank, nor could I fathom having that much on the line.
So Dalvin Cook's a little bit of a different situation than Barkley and Josh Jacobs. These guys, yeah, it's a little scary. Holdout is certainly a potential and something we'll be talking about in the weeks ahead. But Dalvin Cook, he was just flat out cut. So he has an opportunity to negotiate a new deal with a new team. So I'm not assuming that you're going to downgrade him as much as these other backs we're talking about.
Nah, I'll buy the value with you there. And I have been too.
All right, let's talk a little deeper on the strategies. You hit it a little bit on it in the open. And James, I'll tell you right now, inside of our Fantastics Draft Advisor, we always talk about value against mean and the VAM rankings and how you can put your scoring system in and just see how players are reflected. And it basically is against the rest of the players based off of your position settings. And when I just set up, you know, your standard, I mean, yardage and everything PPR, the basic default system here inside Fantastics. And I'm looking at the top names on the board. They're not Jefferson and Chase like you would expect. It's actually McCaffrey and Eckler, these elite running backs. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't a slew of wide receivers being pushed up here, but it is interesting when compared to all those two positions that from the draft advisor factoring in all these things without any recency biases still elevate these guys to the top.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, there's certainly – so Eckler, for me, I guess I wouldn't consider with the first pick, but McCaffrey, I certainly would. And while I like building around a good receiver core, I mean, these guys, not that they play receiver per se, but they're going to catch the ball a ton, so they're going to give you that. They're pseudo, like Le'Veon Bell used to say, running back one and a wide receiver two, those two will give you that kind of borderline production that you just can't replicate at the running back position. And it's hard for me. It's so weird because it's so backward. It's hard for me to say I'd be willing to give up the positional value at receiver early, receiver one, to go against the grain and take running back in the first round. They're both first round picks without question. And yeah. I definitely can get McCaffrey with the first pick too.
Well, there's still, to be clear, the draft advisor is still in the top 11 players, three running backs, a tight end, and seven receivers. So it is receiver heavy. So, you know, the general consensus of the public, but it does elevate those two guys because I get Eckler, and especially McCaffrey. There's concerns. Can they hold up because of past injuries? But I think we all would agree if we knew we were getting 15 or 16 games out of these players, they could easily be the top fantasy producers. So the drop off is, you know, at receiver, you mentioned the depth, and that's the thing. I totally agree. I love getting the wide receiver one, a stud you can count on, but there's probably seven or eight of those guys. And at the running back position with the aforementioned Barkley and Jacobs holdouts looming, I believe the gap between McCaffrey and Eckler has widened. I mean, I get Bijan Robinson, the rookie, and some of these other guys we're going to talk about on the podcast here, but McCaffrey and Eckler are definitive one and two. And you try to tell me you could say there is a definitive three in the board. I mean, it could be a number of people a case could be made for. And at receiver, I just feel like it's a much more deeper tier one at the wideout position than we're seeing at the running back.
Totally agree. They're the only two I would take in the first round because once you get later into the first round, that seems to be like, I hate to say cliff, but a board or a break in the tiers for me at wide receiver. So I will pick the receiver of what's left more often than not and then take whatever running back or another receiver in the second round. So I'm with you. Those two to me are the two first round running backs. And odd as it is to say, they're really the only two that I think are locked into the first round.
And the reality of it is if you want one of these guys just to get one into the two, you can probably get a pick in the first six or seven picks in a draft and ensure yourself of that. That's the beauty of it. So But strategy as a whole at running back, I mean, format is everything. Full point PPR and non-PPR can mean a drastic difference in some of the bench and the depth of the position and guys that you can count on a weekly basis for that floor. Inside of our tool, and you know, one of the things we love is consistency. We use quality starts as a metric, James. And you look at the running back position and the number of quality starts, guys that finish in the top half of the position, it's the guys that are like above 50%+ aren't as many as you see at wide receiver and some of these other spots as well. And I realize they have more guys that are getting stats, so there's a lot of variables to it. But when it comes to consistency and building your fantasy roster, it is nice. I mean, bell cow doesn't exist anymore, but it is nice to know you're going to get a dude that between, you know, his 3-4 catches a week, his carries, his touchdown upside, you can bank on for that consistent floor of, you know, whatever your scoring system is, 15 points a week, let's say, or whatever, guys that just get it done, even if they don't get the touchdowns.
Absolutely. And it is nice to have that player. I think the term that's been tossed around is that anchor running back. And I think that's a strategy for me, is getting one of those. And it doesn't have to be the two guys that we talked about to start with. Certainly they are as nice an anchor as there is, but there are other players. And I think that's the strategy that I really went with last year. And I had a lot of teams that I like, quite frankly. And I know that could be more player related than build related.
Any strategy, you got to hit the player.
Correct. But I did feel like there were different builds with the same pseudo strategy of just one running back that I planned on carrying, carrying my team. And obviously those running backs had to stay healthy. And, you know, a lot of times my RB2 would end up being Josh Jacobs, who was a great find at RB2. So you got to find those RB2s too. But I think you dig around a little bit, and there's a lot of those guys that are going to be later in drafts that you're either in best ball will assert themselves into your lineup on a given day, or case with Jacobs is extreme, but some other players that you might find that they don't necessarily scream, you got to start them every, or they're your anchor every week. But like a Kenneth Walker, who came on after the injury to Penny, he was a late pick. And at the end of the end of the season, he was more or less, you didn't take him out of your lineup at RB2. And as you said, those guys that will come through with these various stats, he even did so against San Francisco, a very tough matchup, because I think he maybe caught 4 passes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think when you look at the guys that have done elite consistently, a Derrick Henry, for instance, I mean, you think like last season, I know injuries have piled up here in recent years with Henry, but last season, you know, he did manage the 16 games, and we saw that result, a career high 12 quality starts. He rebounded nicely, finished the campaign, and this was in a lackluster offense, right? I mean, not very exciting, but the consistency for him has come in the fact of the volume of his ability to get into touchdowns. And I mean, when you get into the guys to build around, you talk about these other pieces. I think a lot of people try to get handcuffs, and I like handcuffing if it's something elite, but the longer we go on in time and the more specialized the position, James, I'd rather have your handcuff than mine.
It depends, I guess. I mean, there's something to be said for having another player's handcuff and maybe getting yourself too many riches.
In our dream league, I don't know if you noticed, but I just traded Dulcich and got me Elijah Mitchell because I've got McCaffrey, and it's like, dude, like if you got McCaffrey and you have a chance to get Mitchell, basically
you have to.
You know, that's an insurance that I was willing to pay, Greg.
Yes.
Dulcich.
You have to. And I mean, I think, you know, you could probably make the same argument about if you're going to have Dobbins, have Edwards too, given the nature of the way that team plays. But with a Derrick Henry, I'm not so sure that there is
guy that's just fills it. That. Henry's, and that's the point I was getting to, is like you got to get the handcuff right sometimes too. And These handcuffs, sometimes they're just not a replacement that does it. I mean, it's not the same old days when, Priest Holmes goes down. That's all right, because I don't even remember. Was it Larry? They're all
Larry
blurring
Johnson?
Together. Larry Johnson, Jamal Charles, all the Chiefs running backs are suddenly blurring
Spencer
together.
Spencer Ware?
I've been playing fantasy for a while, bro. But either way, you get the point. Handcuff, I think it's a wasted draft pick 9 times out of 10, frankly. If you have a larger roster than just your average league, then yeah. I mean, I don't mind having handcuffs if I've got, you know, more than 5 bench spots to play with.
10 bench spots, I think you'd do it. 5 bench spots, I don't think you'd do, because you're going to need players that are going to be ready to be played on bye week.
And you're wasting a draft pick because the buys are going to come up, and you know you're going to end up cutting it. I don't know. To each their own. But again, I like to have guys that have more opportunities, you know, because then for that guy to get valuable, I don't need my running back to get hurt. Maybe this other running back gets hurt. Now I've got 2 running backs. So I don't know. In terms of other strategies, you're talking, you know, heavy running back, something we don't see as much of. You're the hero running back, RB2, sort of getting it right. Is there something to be said about the way you build your backfield? Because not just in terms of the rounds you want to get the dudes in, but the types of running backs. Because as an example, like, and I think we talked about this on, I don't remember where we talked about it. We talk a lot, but the idea of like, there was one team in my couch potato league, which is my hometown old school league, that one year I got a little drunk on the rookie running backs. Really what happened is I sort of waited and went other positions, and then I just loaded up on all these rookies. And it's like, that was okay, but I didn't want to have a bunch of these high risk, high reward guys. You want to have a little bit of a mix. And I think at running back, it goes back. If you get that bell cow running back, well, then, you know, it's a different thing. But maybe you don't go that theory. You're taking a few running backs in those first few rounds. And James, as I look at ADP and the value, we'll get into value. As more and more people are just reaching and more receivers are getting pushed up the board, I am finding myself in these July drafts differently than the April drafts, to where there's a lot of them. I have 2 running backs at the end of round 4, and it's because the guys that are there, I'm like, there's no way. I mean, these guys shouldn't be in this round.
Yeah, and what's the scoring system? How is your lineup constructed? Constructs is maybe the right word, not right word, but set. I.e., is it best ball? Is it half point PPR? Because I know we're both playing in some of these underdogs, certainly I am, where I've done the same thing. I'll get 2 running backs early, because looking at some of my scoring throughout the course of last year, where it's only half point PPR, a third running back found its way into my flex position somewhat frequently, even though it was a later pick, because I was attacking players in these setups, particularly who had touchdown potential. Jamal Williams is a great example from a year ago, and I don't know how much touchdown potential he carries into this year, but behind that great offensive line last year, and a team that was, you know, I wasn't a believer in Swift's health, and they weren't even giving him the ball a ton, there was a prime example of a guy who was going to see a lot of touchdowns. And maybe you didn't have to pick the week that you started him. Now, he scored 17, so you start him every week by the end of last year. But the idea being, when you picked him as an RB4 or 3, whatever he was on draft day, I was attacking guys like that, guys that I knew were going to get the ball around the goal line, because they would play themselves in those 6 points and a half point PPR were almost enough to make them a starting player, if not at least give me a floor at that starting position. So, yeah, I think a strategy when you're attacking running back, particularly after you get your anchor and those RB2s, 3s, 4s, I'm looking for guys, surely in half point, that have that touchdown upside. Maybe in a PPR league, and now we're talking about these main event type of leagues we play in, where I'm also picking my players. Surely there's weeks where you'll pick a player because of a good matchup and you think they have a good chance to score a touchdown. But you like guys to catch the ball a little more. So maybe in those formats, you trend away from an A.J. Dillon, who you think is going to be a big goal line guy, and you go more towards an A-chain who you think is going to catch the ball more. It's all about, one, best ball, not best ball for me when it comes to running back. And then it's also about PPR, non-PPR, half point, et cetera.
Exactly. And it goes back to everything we say about tiers, because the draft's going to be different each time. And so you have to be able to know in certain parts of each round of the draft the players you like at that spot, in that position. There's running backs I love in the 12th round, I don't like in the 9th round. Mm-hmm. Right? So knowing that, knowing the board, tiering it up, it all, running back's no different. But I do think that because there's such a big, you know, everybody's jumping on the shift and change, we're seeing a lot of sudden early to mid round value at the position that we weren't even seeing a couple months ago. And that's where you got to take advantage. And again, that's where a tool like the Fantastics Draft Advisor, where you're getting real time adjustments based off the players going off the board, comes into to value here, because rankings change in real time based off of the position scarcity. And it's a lot easier if you're, you know, caught up in all these other things, if the software is screaming it to you, it's easy to identify, all right, here's where opportunity knocks. We've talked a lot about strategies and tiers and, you know, data. Let's get into the players, all right? And let's start with our breakout candidates. And James, when we talk about the breakout, the big hype trains to get rolling on running backs, usually rookies. This class is loaded, but two in particular, really just to hit on, that should be drafted pretty highly in every league, in every format, Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs. Let's start with Robinson and your expectations for the Falcon rookie.
I think he's such a great player that it almost didn't matter where he landed, but he landed in a place where I think he's going to have every opportunity to get, you know, the most out of his skill set and his talent. Like, I don't know if you're crazy excited about Atlanta's offense, but then you look at all the weapons, you go, maybe I should be even without the quarterback. You look at, you know, the O-line there, pretty good. And then you also look at the division and go, God, they should have a lot of games where they have a chance to allow Bijan to get into a flow. And even if it's nothing after the first quarter, there should be no reason to go away from him because it's 3-0 one team or the other. So my outlook is I think there's every opportunity for him to be very good. But I can also see, you know, you go, how good can that offense be with Ridder? It all hinges on whether or not they're competent at the quarterback position.
Yeah. Well, you could say that about a lot of these running backs. But certainly in Robinson, I mean, here's a guy that, I mean, just looks the part, comes in with the pedigree. You know, when a team, NFL team spends a top 10 pick, it usually hits in fantasy. 8 of the last 10 such players have put up top 10 numbers in their first season, at least in PPR here. So I'm all in on Robinson. I like him, though, deeper he falls into round one, but he is a round one pick, in my opinion. If not, definitely a top 15 pick at the, you know, at the very latest, but he's not going to last in the second round in 8 out of 10 drafts, dude. That's a fact. In a dynasty, you know, James, unless it's a super flex dynasty, the unanimous number one choice, I think we all would agree to that. What about Gibbs? I mean, here's a different player. We talk a lot about him, and I know on the show last week, we really talked a lot about David Montgomery and his presence that sort of eats into this, but when you look at the running back that that he's replacing in a large part in DeAndre Swift, I mean, Gibbs is faster. You can't argue that. I mean, 4.36 at the combine. I mean, he's only 199 pounds. They're talking about moving him all over the field. And he was certainly impactful as a pass catcher in his college days. Caught 104 passes and 8 touchdowns in 3 college seasons, averaging over 10 yards per catch. So PPR-wise, Gibbs is a guy that I don't have enough of right now, to be frank.
If you look at that offense, too, I mean, I think we both would agree that the Lions are a team with a good chance to win that division. They're going to be without James Williams in the first 6 games. So their receiver 2 is Marvin Jones, who played with Stafford there, not Goff. There's no rapport there. So there's Goff. There's Amon-Ra St. Brown. And then what? A rookie tight end? Dude, there's a lot of room in this offense for both running backs. So Montgomery can be really good, and so can Gibbs behind that offensive line. I think they're going to use both running backs a lot in Detroit this year.
Yeah, it should be interesting. And then there's a couple other younger backs I think we could see, you know, in terms of a breakout, a big step up. And I'm interested in both cases. James Cook, Rashad White, a pair of rookies from last year that – seem to be in for an increased role based off of the current rosters here, James. And in the case of White, I mean, he does play on a pretty bad team, but because of his ability to be a pass catcher, to bring the ball out of the backfield and do some of these things, I do think, you know, here's a player that is going to get a lot of opportunities. Now, there are some down indicators on him, as the Fantastics draft advisor points out. You got the F offensive line grade, the C-minus schedule, and, oh, yeah, they lost Tom Brady. So I get that. But, again, opportunity. And I think the fact that he can do it as a passer makes him, depending on where he goes, you know, his blended ADP right now, according to the software, is 708. I don't have a problem going right there on him. The software is saying he's probably a little less than that, though, in terms of his fantasy value per point ADP, FDP there. I like him, but the other guy's catching my eyes, especially if I can get him as an RB3, is James Cook. You know, 5.8 yards per carry last year, 21 catches, 180 yards. He came in down the stretch pretty well. So, but even the Buffalo's offensive line, D-plus grade here, James. So he has a lot of the same metrics that we see in White. These guys are in similar parts of the draft, and I think both of them are guys that are high upside RB3s.
Yeah, I think with White, what you're looking at is a guy who could just compile stats. Not a great team, but if they're losing in the fourth quarter and teams are playing soft coverage, they might let him catch a bunch of passes. And I could see him just ending up with a stat line on a weekly basis where you go, hey, where did that come from? But especially in PPR, it's going to be there. Cook, I think, is probably a little more boom or bust, but in the same like end of the season type stat compilation with White. Here's the thing with Cook is, will he get the ball at the goal line? I doubt that. There'll probably be a lot more goal line opportunities for Cook than White, but in team wise, but I don't know that Cook gets him there. I think he's a guy that, again, PPR you'll like. I think he's going to be the in between the 20s guys for the Bills. But anytime you can get a player on a big offense like that, there are going to be weeks where he's going to be catching. All of a sudden, you look down and he's caught 8 passes and the game's not over yet.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think these guys could have some big season. I mean, there are other guys a little bit down the board. I mean, there are other rookies, obviously, we can talk a lot about. We already did a whole podcast on rookies. You can go back and hear more in depth on that. But before some of the recent news flow, I might have added Isaiah Pacheco to the list because I like what he did down the playoff stretch with the Chiefs. But now they're talking about this pup list situation. You still got McKinnon lurking. Who knows if Edwards-Helaire will get in the mix. We know he didn't pick up his option beyond this year, but I think that Pacheco was a big reason they actually won the Super Bowl.
Sure.
And again, now there's some questions about his availability to begin the season, so that's a little worrisome, but he's a guy that the leash could be short because of the draft capital invested in him and the system and what we see here. But again, in a great offense, and if things break right this year for him, he could really take a step forward. And that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah. I will say though, that's an offense where I'll be drafting RB2 or 3 off the board, because you still get a great offense and you don't have to invest your own fantasy draft capital as high. So yeah, Pacheco certainly could break out, but now it doesn't look that way with the injury. And Edwards-Helaire, does he get another chance? Because they did invest some high capital in him.
Who else are you adding to your list?
I mean, you know, I think Montgomery's going to break out a little bit behind that offensive line, and he's certainly going to have every opportunity. I don't know if Pirine counts as a breakout, but I'm telling you, I'm not ready to believe in Javonte Williams as a rocking ready to go first week of the season with his recovery from ACL. I'm still buying in, as you may have noticed, in Dynasty, but I'm not buying in so much this year. So I think Pirine, I don't know that's a breakout, but he might show that he could actually carry the load like he was doing all the way back.
How about DeAndre Swift? I know people were skeptical after the disappointment, but it's not if you look at his numbers, it's not his fault they gave Jamal Williams all the touchdowns. He was terrible in fantasy, but not really in other places. And I mean, there is a scenario in Philly where you're playing with some of the best well-rounded offense the league has.
I'm investing in Rashad Penny. So I believe that there is a chance for a really good breakout behind that offensive line and that great offense. I'm investing my capital in Penny.
Miles Sanders, you look at what he did in this offense last year. I mean, one of those guys could easily do it, right? I mean, and Sanders, he ranked 28th in the league with 4.8 yards per touch. Swift, he ranked second at 6.3 yards per touch. So, you know, Sanders, a breakaway run rate of 4.6%, which ranked 29th. Swift was 8.1%, which ranked 5th in the NFL. So just on a per-touch basis last year, I mean, he was by far better metrically. And if he gets those opportunities in the offense, I mean, everybody's down on DeAndre Swift. And I get it, but you name a running back in that part of the draft that doesn't have baggage.
They all do.
Yeah. So, again, I'll take shots of these offenses. And it is, again, James, where is DeAndre Swift drafted? I mean, I'm not sitting here, you guys say go to spend your third-round pick on a guy. But I will say that his blended ADP in the Fantastics Draft Advisor, 704, and we're projecting him to be a more of a mid-sixth-round pick in his value. So the draft advisor is on board with me here.
Yeah, and I like I said, I can totally understand that. I think I'm going Penny there.
All right, let's move from breakouts to bust, and we'll start with a couple of yours.
Well, I mean, when you look at the bust category, Dan, you certainly, first of all, got to go, all right, what constitutes a bust. And I'm not even, I mean, as these running backs continue to go down and down the board, that's who you're looking at is do they even have a chance to bust? But I'm going to go at the top of the board and say Saquon Barkley, man, I am just absolutely terrified. Look, if he plays and if news comes out that, okay, he is going to play, but because I certainly was bitten by Le'Veon Bell when he sat out, I am at this point, and it's, you know, late July, at this point, I'm absolutely out. I'm looking at best ball teams that have him, and I'm just, like, worried to death now. So you want an early bust? I'll give you an early bust. That's Saquon Barkley, because I'm terrified he's not going to play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair argument, right? I think he's somebody that could certainly be argued on that list. I think if we're talking about high-end players that I see a place where they bust, I mean, I always think that about Derrick Henry because eventually the wheels are going to fall off, right? Father Time's undefeated. But I think, James, it could be – I mean, I'm going a little further down the board here, but – Alexander Mattison is a guy that's sort of scaring me a little bit because not to say he's not in a great opportunity, but I'm not in on the Vikings I'm not saying I'm not putting Jefferson high and thinking there's some good fantasy goodness here. I'm just talking about as a team that's going to win a lot of games. Certainly they're going to have a less wins than they did last year. I think we all would expect that. So Madison's not going to, this isn't the same Vikings team where they just pounded and pounded and pounded. And I think they have a couple other pieces there. And if they're playing from behind, blended ADP right now, sixth round. And I get it. I'm not saying that if I needed a running back there, I would just skip him. But I definitely think that he has an opportunity to underperform, as does the draft advisor that's got him more as a mid seventh round pick in value right now.
Yeah, he's a player right there that I'm totally with you as a bust as well for a lot of the reasons you just said. I'll tell you, another player that I'm going to throw as a bust that's going a little bit earlier than that, I'm going Breece Hall, man. We've talked before, and I know, look, he was really good behind that O-line before he got hurt last year, but the O-line's not good, and now he's coming back, and we mentioned Javonte Williams earlier. It's the same scenario, but Breece Hall's going so much earlier in drafts. I know he's a superstar, but look back to a year ago with Dobbins and his inability to get back. Look to 2 years ago and Saquon Barkley's inability to be an impact fantasy player. People are drafting Breece Hall like that, and I just can't understand why you don't why there's not any more concern after the recent things we've seen with guys coming back off these knee injuries.
Fair enough. And I mean, the big takeaway for you is like injuries, you're gonna try to avoid these major injuries in general, because I mean that's been a consistent theme.
Sure.
So I get it. And I think, again, as we get deeper into August and get more news flow and see really these guys on the field, what are they doing? What do they look like? I mean, these opinions can change, right?
Absolutely.
These are just off.
They probably won't with the two guys, their two running backs and their ACLs, though, because we get that good news flow every year. I understand,
but some of these things like Saquon, some of these other situations.
Saquon, I could totally change on. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. This could change.
Yes. So we will continue to monitor it.
Sure.
In terms of other guys bust wise, I mean, after you get past like sixth or seventh round, I mean, what is a bust? There is not such thing. So the only other name in the whole, you know, first six, seven rounds of the draft that I get, I mean, he's not being overdrafted. He's where he should be drafted, but I just don't have much exposure to it. And that's James Conner. Early on, I was getting into it and, you know, he's starting to drop down a little further now. But, dude, the Cardinals are just a train wreck. And Kyler Murray, I mean, how much is he even going to play? And then when he does come back, I mean, the guy doesn't work hard or practice or do any of these things. Like, you think he's just going to come back and look great all of a sudden? I mean, they've got nothing there. When Hopkins left, I became very much less interested in James Conner.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. So the touchdowns, it was like, okay, he's not going to do this again. He didn't do it again, but he still found the goal line enough that you were like, this is all right. He had 10 quality starts 2 years ago, 8 quality starts last year. I think that number dips more than the 2 it fell from 2 years ago. There's just no way behind that line. I mean, that team's not even trying. There's 2 really good teams in the division. I know that's only 4 out of 17 games, but there's just so much that screams to me Arizona is trying to get the number one pick for next year. I mean, if there's an NFL team tanking this point in the season, to me, it already looks like Arizona. They have Greg Dortch listed as a starting receiver at this point. I mean, they're not even trying. So that's not making the running back look very good. Yeah, I'm with you. James Conner, no way.
Let's talk some bounce back candidates. You mentioned a lot of these guys you're avoiding this year. Maybe they'll be the guys we talk about on next year's podcast at this spot. But before we get into, you know, some of the other things here, I mean, Jonathan Taylor is the first name that comes to the list, James. I mean, here was a guy, pretty much the quintessential number one pick last year. I mean, last year, all the hype was building on these receivers, similarly we have now, but there were still a lot of people with taking this guy number one, right? And I mean, he is talented. There's no question about that. And he is only 24. He put up 2,171 yards and 20 touchdowns as a rookie. So that's why he was here. Last year, we saw him miss half of last season with that nagging ankle issue. It ended up having surgery in April. But, you know, when he was on the field, it wasn't terrible. I mean, an offensive line wasn't as good as it had been in the past, but he still averaged 89 rushing yards, 9 full games last year, which was down 18 from this previous season. But, dude, here's the thing. If Anthony Richardson comes in and starts as soon as I think he will be, which could be opening day, but if not, I would definitely bet on September.
Yep. Me too.
Once he's there, and these defenses have to adjust to him, I mean, we know mobile quarterbacks open up holes for running backs. And if a guy like Jonathan Taylor can get some holes opened up, James, and he can stay healthy, we know he has the – I mean, this is a guy that could be that bell cow. And if he's falling into round two, I'm not saying he's a lock to get back to those rookie numbers, but none of us would be shocked to see him put up 1,800 yards and 18 touchdowns if, you know, things went that way.
The situation can't get worse than it was last year. I think we'd all agree with that. And then I think you talk about Richardson getting in there. I think he'll get in there right away. Not even opening up holes for Jonathan Taylor. Think about a linebacker that just is a half a second later and making a step because he has to make sure that Taylor has the ball. Now all of a sudden Taylor's running him over instead of getting tackled sideways. Like, I think this is going to open up the offense big time. So I'm with you. And I think there's another guy that warrants an early draft pick that's being not being forgotten or anything, but I think he's a player that certainly has a chance to return to form. I had him in my top five last year. Najee Harris, he got hurt early in the season. That offense was obviously making a transition from Big Ben to Kenny Pickett. I don't know how great they're going to be. You know, I'm optimistic about them being at least good again this year with Mike Tomlin at the helm, who's not had a losing season. And winning games is good for running backs because when you're in games, you're winning games, you get more carries. Najee Harris, 7 quality starts last year after 13 the year before. 5 of those were in the second half as that offense started to find an identity. The O-line in Pittsburgh's okay, C-. I'm going to tell you this. I think Najee Harris, there's for all the reasons that I liked him last year, at age 25, I still like this year. And there's probably a little more reason to be optimistic given where the offense is at versus a year ago.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, we just have to accept he's never going to be like the special guy, right? I mean,
he's not going to be Le'Veon Bell.
Everybody, he's going to be the next Le'Veon Bell. And
maybe there isn't one of those.
Yeah, but he's still solid, right? And 3.9 yards per carry in his first two seasons wasn't great, but that line's been terrible and the line's improving. So I do think, in terms of durability too, he's a guy that doesn't have a lot of baggage in that area yet. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you know, we're talking about all these injuries to all these other players and that we're looking at as RB1s. I mean, he's probably got the cleanest bill of health
so far. Yeah.
Knock on wood. Oh, jinx. All right. So you've named, we both got one. I'm going to add J.K. Dobbins to the list for a lot of the same reasons you've been talking about. I mean, great system. Certainly looks better down the stretch. We know he sat out all of 2021 with that torn ACL, missed half of last year on the follow-up surgery. But, dude, when he came in at the end of last season, I mean, he was averaging 92 rushing yards in his final 5 games, 6.6 yards attempt, dude.
Yeah.
And with Lamar Jackson under center, assuming he can stay healthy, for a lot of the same reasons we just talked about with Anthony Richardson, I mean, Dobbins is a dude that's being drafted as like a mid to late RB2 in some leagues, James, and he certainly has back end RB1 potential given the current situation of things that we're discussing here.
Yep. He's a player that I would consider still as an anchor running back. And, you know, I did get bit last year buying into him being ready, but I'm buying in this year with another year of recovery. And we saw him come to form. Look, he is he's had a few years under his belt here in the NFL, but not a lot of wear and tear since hitting the NFL. Didn't play a lot as a rookie. I mean, there's not – obviously, he didn't play much last year because of the ACL 2 years ago, and that in itself is baggage of the injury. But he's otherwise pretty fresh. I think he could be a fierce force this year.
All right, we're up against it. We have a few minutes left here, James. I just want to do some real quick hits here. Go a little bit deeper than we've done on the other positions, a quarterback and tight end. Just some quick hits. Ping pong back here. We'll start with guys I want to get your take on. Nick Chubb with no more Kareem Hunt in Cleveland.
I mean, Nick Chubb is Derrick Henry light right now. And I mean, I think he should be drafted as such. He's very like Derrick Henry and a great offensive line.
I love Nick Chubb.
What more can you say?
I think especially now with the Saquon Barkley looming things we're discussing here, Nick Chubb, a guy that is easily a top five running back on my board. We love him the draft advisor as well. We think he's offering a good half round of value right now. And without Kareem Hunt there, an expanded opportunity perhaps in that passing game. So
he should be handcuffed with Jerome Ford.
Maybe. I mean, we have different philosophies on that. So let's talk about Aaron Jones with no Aaron Rodgers.
Good offensive line. I would assume it makes sense to feature both of those running backs, Aaron Jones as well as Dylan. The division, you know, who knows what goes on there? I don't know if they're going to be a winning team. And if they are, maybe they have to turn to Love. In that case, Jones will catch the ball in the backfield too. So I still think Aaron Jones is a player with some nice value.
How about Damian Pierce? I know Singletary was signed, but he showed enough as a rookie. But, you know, is he a top 20 running back?
He's right there on the fringe for me. You know, that's not an offense that I'm trying to invest in. And he was good in spite of that offense a year ago. But he was the only – you know, it's not fair to say he was the only man in town because I think Burkhead had his moments as well. But
he was in a bad team last year, but he accumulated 8 quality starts in 13 games. And the next gen stat shows he gained 0.37 yards per carry, more than expected. This all just right there at your fingertips inside the draft advisor. Let's get to Alvin Kamara, James. We know – he's got the off-the-field problems and is looking at this personal conduct policy. Still some questions about what that's going to end up being. But it's all baked into the ADP right now. I mean, Kamara, in some cases, isn't even being on the top 30 running backs. Should he be?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think by the time you're drafting him as an RB3, the upside that he offers late in the season when if there's a suspension that we all – assume will be he'll be back from it. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, at the price he's going, I'm certainly not avoiding it.
Because you turn to him, what are you doing then? You're turning to him in the bye weeks or injuries hit. You hope that's after the suspension. No harm for you.
All right, we'll end it with a few backfield battles and how you think it will go. Let's start in Washington, the Commanders. It's Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson. Which one's better as a fantasy running back this year?
Half point PPR, I'll take Brian Robinson. Full point PPR, I'll take Antonio Gibson. I think the workload will be shared with Robinson, obviously carrying more of the ground game. Gibson has talked about maybe getting back to playing receiver. Is there a chance they both see the field with significant shared snaps?
What about the Bears?
For me, it's Foreman. You know, Herbert hasn't done anything to make me like fall over for him. And granted, that offense has been kind of dicey to begin with as they're growing into what they're becoming. And for me, Roschon Johnson, people are all about him. But right now, Foreman is a player who got nearly 1,000 all-purpose yards last year on a bad team. This team's better than where he was. I like Foreman.
In Miami, assuming they don't get Dalvin Cook, Raheem Mostert, Jeff Wilson, both seem like RB3s, maybe RB4s at worst, but certainly pieces to consider for that bench, James. Wouldn't you agree?
I think what you're doing in that team is you're just drafting whoever is still left over if you want to get a taste of that, because the offense is certainly electric. And we know what Mostert did last year was pretty good. They drafted A-Chain. Can he protect the quarterback? Do they care to protect the quarterback? I think they do.
Is Zach Charbonnet being under-considered by fantasy managers right now in his role with Kenny Walker in this Seattle backfield?
I don't know if Seattle can be Arian Foster and Ben Tate with their two running backs, especially with three pretty good receivers. I don't know if we can get to that level. But yes, I mean, I think, look, maybe it turns into be a little bit uglier of a situation like you had with A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones last year. It wasn't as pretty as I wanted A.J. Dillon to be. But yeah, I think so. I think Charbonnet is being underappreciated. I certainly dropped him when he first got drafted. Then I've come back around to the fact that he was still a talented, talented player.
It's the 20th round of your, whether it's your BB10, your KFFC main event, any of the larger drafts we like to play in, you're going to go running back on that last pick. What's a sticker you might put on the board?
Ooh, the 20th round. I'm not necessarily hoping to get there. But if we're at the 20th round, I don't know, is Cordarrelle Patterson still there?
That's deep enough. He is 32, but he doesn't.
Because he may see some snaps at receiver and maybe get some playing time with
Bijan. He's still going to have a role. I like him in best ball. So in best ball, he would definitely be worth that late round pick. All right. That's all the time we've got for this time. If you miss any of the other positions, find them wherever you listen. Be sure to subscribe to us. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, to name a few, anytime, insiderfootball.com. And while you're there, definitely download a free trial. Check out this Fantastic Draft Advisor. We've been talking about it all throughout the podcast here today. We got a free trial at your fingertips over there. And be sure to catch James and myself back here on the podcast and on SiriusXM Fantasy weekend mornings all summer long, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Channel 87. Until next time, thanks for listening to another edition of the Fantastic Insider Football Podcast.